Here's the title of a good scare, good scare, good scare, good scare.
Hello and welcome everyone to episode 65, I think.
Math is hard.
Yeah, it is.
Well, 65 is an official retirement age, right? So, yeah, senility is setting in. That's all it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. So anyway, episode 65 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, David. Along with me is Jamie.
Hello.
And with us again is Bo.
Hey, everybody.
It's so adorable and jovial. I just love it.
Yeah. I'm a jovial fella.
That's not what you were saying when we got on the line.
I was forced into a state of wanting to squeeze a bunny till I felt it squish.
Yeah, I know. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm good now. Everything's cool. Good. Everything's cool, baby.
So how are we doing?
We good. I'm doing right. Honestly, since I've started recording regularly again, it's like things are just falling into place. My life feels... it's weird. I'm serious. The hiatus really fucked me up, and because it wasn't just here, it was the Skeleton Crew and Evil Episodes was sort of sporadic because it always is, and then it felt like I was never doing it, like never recording, and it was very depressing, and I was sinking into this hole, and it was awful, and then I was saved. That's it.
Yes. Okay. And I feel great because my paper on people who must podcast is really coming together. I'm getting to the end where the podcasts come back.
Ah.
The study is nearing its conclusion.
Excellent.
How coincidental.
Yes, coincidence.
We'll go with that.
So what did you guys watch this week? Or since a lot? Well, yeah, it's been about a week.
No, it's been 4 days, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been no time at all, but I'm okay with that. I am A-okay with that. I watched Rawhead Rex. I know we're watching that next week for the show, and I'll watch it again before that. I felt like I needed it, and I'd been talking about it so much I'm so excited about it coming up on the show, and then I've been talking to Duncan, who loves it as well, and when I told him, I'm like, I'm so excited we're going to be watching Rawhead Rex. And he's like, I just watched that last night. You know. So then I'm like, well, now, damn it, I got to watch it. And so anyway, watch that. Catching up on my TV shows for Evil Episodes. So I'm watching Whodunit and Under the Dome, which either of you guys happen to be watching Under the Dome?
No.
I've watched the first 3 episodes.
It's apparently getting a second season.
It is. Yeah. It has been greenlit. So... things are getting kind of weird. This is just this is another one of those little towns with where all kinds of weird stuff is bubbling under the surface, and it just takes something crazy to knock it out. I think I'm digging it. I really like it. So there's that. Oh, and Dexter, final season of Dexter. So it's really good, and it's going off the rails, but I'm still sad. But but you know, it really had nowhere else to go. And that's it, mostly. It's been a lot of TV.
Cool. Bo?
Aside from watching the films for tonight, I've been very busy. I haven't had much time to watch much else at all. Although I did watch True Blood, current with that, and The Newsroom is my other HBO obsession. And both of those are, well, The Newsroom is really, really good. True Blood is True Blood.
Yeah, I was about to say, that show is probably the same as it's always been.
You know, this season's been slightly better than last, just because they seem to have embraced the batshit craziness of that show.
Right.
Recently, there was glowy fairy sex. And, yeah, yeah. And I thought, you know, this is something I don't get on any other show. I'm not sure I want it, but this is the only place I get it. So, yeah.
I think it seems like, I felt this way last season, that you have sort of settled into True Blood the way you've settled into Supernatural. So, like, you're in it for the long haul, even though it doesn't excite you as much as it used to.
Yeah, yeah. It's really a marriage of sorts, where some of the spark is certainly gone. But
well, obviously you're not married to me.
I'm taking that into account.
I can't even do an impression of myself. Which, by the
Jamie
way,
Jamie Jenkins, the lady of a voice.
Well, damn good thing it's a good one. actually, Corey did an impression of me on the last Evil episode. I haven't heard it yet, but Gary told me I should, quote, jack them up for it. So I guess it was pretty bad.
Well, no one's been able to top Bo's impression of you.
Right. Mine is pretty true. Dead on.
You reign supreme in so many ways.
I know.
I'm ready to do the news, David.
No. That was me, guys. That wasn't Jamie.
I didn't know.
Right. I don't want you to get confused. Like,
I was like, I didn't say I was ready to do the news. Did I? Did I say that? It's. I thought I was going crazy. Turns out it's just. Sorry, Dado. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Don't worry about it.
Quiet, Jamie.
So I didn't actually watch a whole hell of a lot. I watched most of the recent released Justice League Flashpoint Paradox, which is pretty good, but I just didn't finish it because I did.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, been reading comic books though, so I've been going through the Death of the Family arc from the recent. Well, I don't know how recent it is, but it spans across several different DC books. It's pretty good. Joker has become, I don't know how they did it, but he's fucking crazier and scarier than ever before. So bravo, DC.
Yeah, it's been, I've kind of lost track of some of the new 52 titles that I was into. I need to go back and catch up on those. I may do that pretty soon. I'm going to be traveling and out and about. So,
we'll talk about that after the show.
What? Talk about what?
Comic books.
Oh,
how
okay.
I can help you.
Oh, well, help me. I after watching Dark Knight Returns, mm-hmm. that particular animated film, parts 1 and 2,
right.
Awesome. I thought that was really, really well done. And Peter Weller kind of approaches Batman with a bit of a monotone, but I think it kind of works for that character.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was all right. And the Joker bothered me initially because it wasn't Mark Hamill.
Right.
And by the end of it, though, I was really on board. I thought the Joker was really creepy by the end.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel when I play Lego Batman. Like, the Joker, whoever they have doing the Joker's voice is good, but it's not Mark Hamill. So, yeah. So, really quickly, before we get into the news, we have a contest going on.
We do have a contest, and people have been submitting stuff already.
Yeah. Yes, they have.
Incorrectly, but they've been submitting.
Yes, things. Reading comprehension people. Jesus. So, the rules are simple. We want you to tell us when about a time that one of us was wrong, or all of us were wrong about something, whether it was a review or a comment we made, and to send it in to me at my email, which is sendbydave@gmail.com, and we will choose a winner. Whoever has the best one will get a Silver Shamrock t-shirt.
It couldn't be easier.
No, it really couldn't be. So that will be fun. Also, we're going to debut a new segment this week called Ask DTP, because we've got some questions that we're going to answer.
Oh, yeah. What a great idea.
Because, Bo, you were talking about questions being answered last week, so.
I didn't realize I was prophetic. Oh, my God.
That's not like we had that thing posted on the Facebook page asking for questions for, like, you know, a month.
Right. And I know we got some, so let's, yeah. Come on, hit me, Dave. Shit.
Well, we're going to do that after the news.
Oh.
Yeah. Change shit up.
I get to talk first. No, but do you think it'll be an incentive if I tell them that whoever wins the shirt, it might smell like me?
Any particular part?
Oh, I was just talking about wearing it. I wasn't going to do anything weird with it, psycho.
Oh, I'm the psycho one.
No, I'm just kidding. I have my own. But it probably wouldn't be incentive anyway. It'd be incentive for a bonfire.
Jamie has her own distinctive scent.
All right.
I don't know. I think you should throw that up as an option. Okay, if you win this shirt, then you have the option of Jamie sleeping in it for a night before sending.
Yes, but I, you know what? And I would do that, but only upon request. Like, I wouldn't force anybody.
Right. I wouldn't be like, it's a perk.
You know our listeners.
Yeah, no.
I know, and God, I love them so much. I love them so much.
We're going to get an essay from Duncan about, you know.
Iris.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be a fight.
It's going to be awesome. No, I'm kidding. Well, then you guys, then the next prize that we give away, then you guys have to sleep in it.
Right. Who likes meat sweat? I guarantee you, I will eat a half-pound cheeseburger and then fall asleep in a hot room in this item of clothing.
Meat sweat and beer farts.
Where do I sign up for that?
I guarantee that whatever you get sent could theoretically tie me to a murder.
You know what? I wouldn't even doubt that. Doubt it at all.
You could leave this item at the scene of a crime. People would come knocking at my door, not yours.
Yeah.
Scary who would respond to that, though.
I can't imagine. Although it might bring some things out of the woodwork. That would be both, you know, flattering, maybe even a little curious. I would imagine Gil would do it, you know?
Yeah, he would.
He would set me up. Yeah. Damn you, Scotland.
It would be all a part of that, all the massive plan, you know, that Scotland has to combat your wiles.
Yeah, I don't want this to sound paranoid, but I'm pretty sure all of Scotland is against me.
You're not paranoid, it's true.
Right.
At least my army is it. No, they love you. Oddly, they love you, even though you say they talk like stroke victims.
I haven't said that in months.
They just laugh and go, he's so funny. And I'm like, no, really, he's evil. He means it.
He doesn't even have a heart. It's just an open circulatory system, much like an insect.
There's no such thing as insect politics.
Right? Compiling the Boatfly Museum of Natural History.
Yay.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Okay.
Okay, sorry.
So, we will be right back with the news.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Hey guys, Bo here. Today I'm going to tell you about Ian of IanTheComicArtist.com. He's a gothic photographer and illustrator whose work trends toward the dark and macabre with a healthy dose of cyberpunk for good measure. His work can be found in a variety of novel covers, magazines, and event posters. Information on purchasing prints and t-shirts of his photography and illustration work can be found at his website, IanTheComicArtist.com, as well as commissioning original work for private and commercial use. He's a good old-fashioned Canadian boy, and you can even catch up with him on Twitter at @GothicRobots, plural. So if you are in need of some graphic design work, head over to IanTheComicArtist.com, and he will fulfill all of your dark wishes.
Good evening.
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny.
Civil defense officials in Cumberland have told newsmen that murder victims show evidence of having been partially devoured.
Hey, sure, I'll do it for $50.
Beware the moon, David.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Holy shit! She's a friend of mine!
All right, everyone, and we are back with the news. This time, I'm going to warn you when the last one's coming. Bo, quick question for you. Did you have a My Buddy when you were growing up?
That's a personal question, and I decline to answer.
Aw, come on. Wherever you go, he's going to go.
No, I don't believe I did.
Okay.
I did have an alien doll.
Of course you did.
I had a talking elf doll.
Oof.
Lucky.
I know, it was awesome. No, I know you was that was you calling the cat, but I still felt lucky. Stop derailing me. First up, there's been a director found for Quasimodo starring Josh Brolin. Variety, that just seems, does that seem odd? I don't know, seems odd to me. Variety reports Hero and House of Flying Daggers helmer Zhang Yimou is in talks to direct Quasimodo for Warner Brothers Pictures. With the story dating back to 1831, The Hunchback of Notre Dame has been adapted dozens of times across film, television, radio, and for the stage, including in musical and ballet versions. Set in Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, the novel tells of Quasimodo, a deformed hunchback who dwells within and who falls in love with a dancing gypsy, Esmeralda. The film has had Josh Brolin attached to star for more than 2 years. Kieran and Michelle Mulroney wrote the original script.
Did they say who is going to play Esmeralda?
No, I don't know. They may have announced that
Josh
somewhere.
Brolin. Josh Brolin will play everything.
Yeah, no, I guess no one said he was gonna. They said he was gonna star. They didn't say he was gonna be Quasimodo. But
play, he's Quasimodo.
Yeah, I don't really know a whole lot about this movie. They haven't.
Yeah,
even
this
in that,
the first
it
I've
was
heard
just,
of it.
Here's Josh Brolin. Here's the director, and here's who wrote it. That's all you get.
Right.
So,
as long as they're singing gargoyles, I'm there.
I think Disney might have an issue with that.
Disney has an issue with everything.
Yeah, well.
That's just because they own everything.
This is true.
Okie dokie. Sarah Michelle Gellar talks Buffy feature film.
Go on.
Well, I knew you were going to say that. Would Sarah Michelle Gellar reprise her role as Buffy the Vampire Slayer if given the opportunity? Well, what do you think? Still, if you're a journalist and you get the chance to talk to the actress, you have to ask the question, and that's what E did. Actually, they used the Veronica Mars feature film Kickstarter success as a lead-in, and here's what Gellar had to say about the notion of a Buffy feature film. Quote, Joss and I always talk about a movie, but the thing with Buffy is that Buffy was a movie, and if it ultimately didn't work as a film, and I mean, which I disagree with,
yeah.
And I mean, we had such miles to overcome when we were trying to do a TV show based on a movie, and one of the reasons is that the story works better over time. End quote. She added that if the story was right, it would be the time to do it. But I wouldn't hold your breath. Well, that...
Yeah, I don't think Joss Whedon is... I think he would do another Firefly film before he did another Buffy film.
I wish
or
he would
a Buffy film.
Buffy film.
Oh, no shit.
I'd be like, I'd be all over that, like, stink on Bo's t-shirt.
Right. Meat sweat on my shirt. I love the Buffy show, like I do a child. It is enduring and everlasting. And I still think there are episodes of that show that rank with the best episodes of any show I've ever seen anywhere. Most notably, The Body. That is maybe the finest episode of any television show I've ever seen. I agree, though. I don't know that it necessarily works as a film. Like, the first movie is okay, and there are moments I really like from it, but it's also... It doesn't have anywhere near the poignancy and also kind of the depth that the show had for sure. So,
well, the original was just a dopey comedy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I love it.
It wasn't attempting to be anything else. And that's exactly why I love it too.
And I mean, at this point, I don't care enough about Buffy anymore to want a movie. Like, maybe 10 years ago when I was still a fan. At this point, I'm kind of over it. I'm like, meh, meh.
Oh, you watch Once More with Feeling and you tell me meh.
You know, I really do. I love Buffy, the show. I do. But I'm kind of sick of that episode. That's the one that's everybody always real? Wants to watch. Yeah, well, I've just seen it so many times.
Fair enough, fair enough. So watch The Body. That'll make you feel terrible about things for days.
Well, that's exactly what I love.
Which one is that?
It's the one where Buffy's mom dies.
Oh.
Spoilers.
Yeah. You know,
for a show that's been off the air for 10 years.
Right. But it has no music in it, and there's nothing really supernatural about it. It's just she dies.
Right. She just dies of cancer.
And, yeah. And if you've ever been through the death of a relative, particularly, that show captures the weird boredom and strange kind of grieving that happens in a way that I've never seen captured anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It is so accurate. It's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I know I've seen it, but not recently. I don't even remember that much about it.
It's not exactly on the top list of fun episodes to watch.
No, not fun, but holy shit, is it good.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Okay. The Mummy reboot is seeking a new director. Maybe they should talk to those people up there because, and by up there, I mean higher up on the news list, because they found a director. Universal's The Mummy, a new take on the classic movie monster, has lost a director in Lynn Wiseman, reports The Wrap. I remember when we initially talked about him doing that movie.
Yeah.
Wiseman recently directed the Total Recall remake, as well as the pilot for the upcoming Fox series, Sleepy Hollow. Says scheduling conflicts are preventing him from taking on the Mummy reboot, which Universal wants in theaters in the summer of 2014. Producers Sean Daniels, Alex Kurtzman, and Roberto Orci are now searching for a new director. Prometheus scribe John Spates wrote the new script, which is set in modern day. That's one that I would be interested to see still. I'd be kind of curious to see what they do with it, because honestly, as much as I adore the original Universal movies, which I do, I mean, I grew up on those. It's like my heart. The Mummy in particular was one of the more boring ones.
Yeah.
Because he didn't really do much. And even when he attacks people, it's just, you know, everyone, the only thing he ever did back then was choke people. And well, I would like to see something a little more interesting.
Wolfman choked people. Frankenstein choked people. Mummy choked people.
Yes, they all just choked people. Like, you got nothing? Nothing better than that. But so I would be interested to see that. But I don't know. I guess it'd be one I guess you have to tread lightly with, because if you go, I don't want it to be all Brendan Fraser, the Mummy, you know.
Right, no. Right. That ran its course.
And it wasn't very good to begin with.
I really enjoyed the first one in theaters. That was a really fun movie. But after that, I didn't really care. Like, okay,
I preferred the ride at Universal to the film.
Well, how about that?
Universal, yeah, the ride's pretty good. The movie, eh.
Huh. Well, do you know what I'm about to talk about next?
Tell us.
Painful childhood memories?
Well, that's all the time. This is the last news item. Yep. And it is, interestingly enough, because we actually it was mentioned earlier, a Supernatural spinoff to kick off next spring. Supernatural's legacy is being expanded. The hit CW series not only kicks off its ninth season on October 8th, but it's getting a spin-off series as well. Executive producer Bob Singer spilled the beans during Comic-Con that something was brewing, but now news has broken that the CW plans to set up the spin-off take in an episode of Supernatural next spring. The episode, serving as a pilot of sorts, will introduce new characters and pave the way for the new series. According to TV Line, the spinoff will use Chicago as a backdrop and, quote, will explore the clashing hunter and monster cultures in the Windy City, end quote. No title has been revealed for the new project.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll give it a shot for sure. I know it's not Eric Kripke doing it. It's the new showrunners, I think, who are launching that show. And we'll see. It's interesting that they're going to go to a single location like Chicago, because so much of Supernatural is about going all over the country.
That's true. Well, and because of that, it makes it easy to have just like a never-ending run of disposable characters. When you set it in one spot, you know, you tend to get a broader character base because you know more people. A totally different take is what I'm trying to say. But that usually means that the preceding show is in its death throes. So is 9 going to be the final season for Supernatural?
Who knows? Not that I've heard. And you look at something like going back to Buffy, but when Buffy and Angel were running concurrently for a while, and I thought that worked pretty well. The first season or so of Angel isn't great, but after that, there's some really, really good stuff in there.
Well, that's true. All right. Well, anyway, that's the end of it. So there. Done with the news.
All right. Cool.
All right.
So we'll be right back with Ask DTP.
Hey everyone, Bo here. You heard us talk about a contest. Well, here it is. What we need you to do is go to our Facebook page, and you can find that page at facebook.com/groups/devourthepodcast. Once there, we need you to tell us why one of us or all of us is wrong. That's right. Your job to win our deluxe fancy and schmancy Silver Shamrock t-shirt is to tell us why we have been mistaken, either in a review or just a random comment. So don't worry about pulling any punches. We can take it. Tell us where we were stupid. That's it. Enjoy.
And that's a wrap.
Sweet. Another episode in the can. You know what Moviecopia needs now?
Another co-host.
A promo.
Yeah, something that tells listeners that we review movies of all kinds on Moviecopia.
Like anime and horror, stuff like Afro Samurai and The Howling.
Action and sci-fi, like Die Hard and Angry Red Planet.
An invite of a sort to join us as we try to find the best of the best.
We should think about getting one recorded for Moviecopia.
Yeah!
So, stop me if you've heard this one. A blind man, a Bigfoot hunter, and a lesbian walk into a bar.
Really?
What? It's funny! Find us at moviecopia.blogspot.com. We are also available on iTunes and Stitcher Internet Radio.
Okay, so this is our new segment, Ask DTP, and if you guys want to participate, all you have to do is send us questions, which you can do on the Facebook page or to the email address, which is sendit@david@gmail.com, and or the via voicemail, and we will play them during the segment. So, first up, this one's from Roscoe, because he's a smartass. He says, will there be a Friday the 13th Blu-ray box set? No. No, there won't.
Oh, I thought they had just announced that.
No. No, there will not be, Roscoe. No box set for you.
I feel like you're using this segment to, grind at personal axe here.
Hey, he's been talking shit about me for like the last 4 or 5 episodes, so...
Quit giving him so much ammunition.
I've been gone for like a month, and he's just doing nothing but talking shit.
You've been gone for like a month, and he still has plenty of ammunition.
I know. It's ridiculous.
I'm behind on my episodes. What sort of shit talking is happening?
He's been giving me shit pretty much since we announced since the correction to the story about the Friday the 13th box set. He's been giving me shit about that ever since. And I said I was wrong, and that my line of thinking was correct, although I had forgotten that Warner Brothers had the rights to Paramount's catalog. So, kiss my ass, Roscoe.
Thank you, Roscoe.
Jerry asks, what's your favorite bad sci-fi / horror movie? Could be anything, even stuff as laughable as Robot Monster, as long as you genuinely find it entertaining. Bo.
Oh, wow. There are so many that I kind of love for their awfulness. I've probably given this answer before, but Blood Shack is my favorite bad horror movie because the villain is called the Chooper, and that's kind of funny. To pad the runtime, at two different moments in the film, they go to the rodeo, which is just filled with stock footage, which is also hilarious. And there are at least two scenes I can think of off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. That are so clearly one take shots that should never be one take shots. that like people flub lines and drop props and that kind of thing.
Right.
And they're just like, go with it. This is good. It's terrible, but it's wonderfully terrible. It's almost charmingly awful.
Yeah. Jamie?
What was the criteria? Was it horror or sci-fi or
yeah, either or?
Either or. Okay. Well, it's easier. Horror is easier for me, although I do love it, a lot of shitty sci-fi, but pretty much anything with a giant bug will make me happy. But two of my favorite, they're kind of tied, is our Head of the Family. Mm-hmm. That movie makes me laugh out loud. I freaking love it. And Jacko, which is really terrible, but it's got Linnea Quigley, and she's good. Mm-hmm. It's just the movie is yee. But it's just one of those that I watch it every single Halloween season and pretty much know it by heart. And if anybody ever watches it with me, they kind of give me this look like, are you kidding me right now? But it's just one of those that, you know how they get close to your heart whether you want them to or not.
Damn. I'd say one of them would be probably Humanoids from the Deep because that movie is awful, but hilarious.
Yeah, it is good.
Nothing is funnier than Fish Rape. And that's something I never thought I would say until I saw it. There's that. If you want to hear my defense of fish rape, listen to episode 4 of the show where I talk about how rape is never funny except when it's men in giant fish suits flopping around on top of girls. It is truly
like
the funniest thing.
Really require a defense, though? I mean, who would dare?
I don't know. It is hilarious. Also, probably like Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horror, which is awful. Awful movie, but it's corny as shit, and I love it because it's corny.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a science fiction film.
Yeah, it's
hard.
I
would almost say Dark Star, but that's kind of intentionally weird and bad.
Right.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of sci-fi.
Although I will say, and I don't even know the name of the film, but there was an episode of MST3K where they did a sci-fi film, and the protagonist had, you know, kind of that 80s blonde wavy hair and was just built like a shit brick house. And
did he also have a dinner roll taped to his chin? I mean, not for real, but that's what it looked like.
Very possibly. And I know for a fact, Jamie, I've mentioned this to you before, but every time that he appears in a scene, they give him a different name. And it's like, you know, Chuck Beefley.
Oh, yes.
Chip
Stakely.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. And it'll make me cry laughing. Because there, if you go to YouTube, there's a montage of just all the names that they give this dude. And I will, by the end of it, I'm just weeping. And I like, faith in humanity has been restored. It's good for
wow,
my heart.
It's like a religious experience.
It is. Oh, man.
I did think of a sci-fi one. And it's kind of funny you should mention Mystery Science Theater because that's where I first saw it. It was so incredibly bad on Mystery Science Theater that I went and bought it for real and then watched it again. And it's just as fucking bad. But you don't have to have those. It's so bad you don't have to have them to make the commentary to make it fun because you do it yourself. But it's Hobgoblins. And so terrible, but it's so much fun. And if you want to see like gremlin dolls on sticks, which is exactly what it looks like. And
strangely kind of sleazy.
Oh, it is. Well, part of that is due to Dwayne Whittaker, who he doesn't have a huge role in the movie, but he plays a bouncer in this club toward the end. And he just, that whole thing, and he's just dripping with sleaze. So
yeah. Speaking of fish rape. That's a dude who'll go after a carp.
Oh. Let's see, for sci-fi, I think it would have to. I think it's called Warriors of the Wasteland. It's like this really awful Italian movie with. Oh, what was it? Fred Williamson's in it. Yeah, that's it. Fred Williamson's in it for some reason, like inexplicably. The MST3K guys did the riff tracks, and it's got a great, like, Claudio Simonetti score for some reason, but it's awful. And it's like this group of the bad guys are like these really weird, like 80s metal guys with the big hair and makeup, and they're like a cult of death or something in the wasteland. It is awful. It doesn't make any goddamn sense, and it is hysterical. So check that out.
All right, that is a thorough answer to Jerry's question.
Yes, Jerry has another question.
I'm sorry, I missed the Jerry who?
Esposito.
Oh, okay. Hi. Love you. We have a lot of Jerrys.
Oh.
Have you noticed this?
No, I haven't.
Dude, they're everywhere.
They get in the walls and
but
breed
they're
at
all
night.
Fantastic. They're all amazing. I love them all. But
he also asked, what is your favorite old classic movie? Any genre. And by old, I mean before, say, 1941.
Oh, yeah.
There were movies? 1941? I'm kidding.
Mine's easy.
Okay, go ahead, Bo.
It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite movie ever made.
Yay.
Aw, now see, that's something about Bo that no one would ever guess because he's such a raging asshole. But
yeah, no, I love Jimmy Stewart, and I to this day, I think it's the best character study ever done on film. I've seen that movie innumerable times, and I feel like George Bailey is a real living, breathing person who I understand all his hopes and desires, and I like seeing him get shit on, and it's great. That movie is fantastic. And okay. I do cry at the end.
Aw, that's so sweet. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I always cry when Optimus Prime dies.
I can't imagine how, but
have you not seen the original Transformers movie?
Of course I have.
Oh, I know, but
I just don't cry during
it. Don't cry? Oh, you have no soul.
Monster.
Sorry, okay. I cry when real people go through emotional things.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Jimmy, go ahead.
Mine is Gone with the Wind. I have always loved the attention to detail in that film. They were very insistent about using, which is one reason it was crazy expensive, but everything, they wanted everything to be authentic. And so put a lot of time and effort into that. I think it's beautiful. And there are some really cool matte painting effects that go on to create 12 Oaks, you know, when they're pulling up for the barbecue, stuff that really seems like it's it's ahead of its time, you know, except Wizard of Oz was also kicking some amazing special effects at the same time. But I think it's one of the most beautiful films ever made to look at.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go a little bit past 1941 because I can't think of anything prior to that that isn't a horror movie. So I'm going to go with Casablanca from 1942.
No, quite good.
It's an amazing film, and
Bogart is brilliant. Yeah,
that's a good movie.
Yeah. It's just a really good movie. If you've never seen it, you need to rectify that.
You better rectify.
Let's see. Merriman had a couple of questions that are both smartass and directed to me. Yes, does the Bart doors accommodate a man of such great height? Yes, actually. I only have to duck a little bit. And have I ever dressed up as the tall man for Halloween? No. I'm not that big a fan of Phantasm, honestly.
Oh, why not?
Why?
Why?
Yeah, but I would do it just so I could walk around going, boy!
Yeah. Great
it's just a dream. No, it's not.
Certainly.
Yeah, and the balls are one of the great inventions of horror films. Those little silver balls are fantastic.
Right? So, Frederick had a question for me, which was, who is David De La Morte? Which actually, that is my Twitter handle, and that comes from Cemetery Man, actually. Because I saw that movie when I was 21, 22, I want to say. And that ending fucking blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
We actually talked about that when we reviewed that movie on the show.
So that had a huge impact on me. So that's what.
Yeah, get it together, Frederick.
Don't ask me what episode that was because I don't remember.
It was the one where we talked about Cemetery Man.
Oh, and we did Dylan Dog. I want to say that's 23 or 24.
That's so weird. I was just looking at that Blu-ray the other day for Dylan Dog, and I was like, you know what? I want to see that again. I liked it.
It was all right. Let's see. Ian, our good friend Ian. Not fucking Ian, but Ian.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's a joke that only two of us will understand.
Yeah, right. Couldn't be more inside because even Jamie doesn't get that one.
Right. We'll explain that
later. I even care.
Okay.
I have my own jokes.
All of them terrible.
That's why I laugh all the time.
I thought it was because you were crazy. Anyway, so Ian says, outside of the horror genre... or outside of horror, what are your favorite genres of movies? Bo?
Comedy. That is okay. my other big love. I love classic comedy films.
Okay. Jamie?
Comedy. But I really enjoy... You know what? Some of my favorite movies are Coen Brothers films.
Hmm.
If it's not horror, then... if you want to reach outside and find some of my favorite directors that don't do horror, then it's Coen Brothers.
Oh, okay.
And they are almost their own genre.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's like
that's true.
Tarantino movies, Coen Brothers movies, and then I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's actually dramas. I really enjoy a good drama. The darker, the better, because I love a good fucked up drama.
Have you seen The Sweet Hereafter?
No, not yet.
Oh, son. You want a drama that's going to make you feel terrible.
Have you seen The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things?
I don't believe I have.
Do you want to contemplate suicide?
Yes.
Watch that.
Okay.
Pick me.
You'll never want to fucking breathe again. Go ahead, yes?
I was saying pick me. I would contemplate suicide. It's not funny when I have to spell it out.
Or to begin with.
And final question is Ian's second question. He says... do any of us consider Godzilla films and other giant monster films to be part of the horror genre? And he's heard arguments both for and against that notion. So, Bo, go ahead.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's horror in the sense that it horrifies you. Although the original Gojira in the Japanese cut without all the Americanization and so forth, is a pretty straightforward horror film, really. But once it gets into, you know, destroy all monsters territory, I still count it, though, because where else are you going to put it? It's not really sci-fi. It's not, certainly not comedy, drama, maybe action, but it's a bunch of goddamn monsters. But yeah, it's a horror movie.
Okay, fair enough. Jamie?
I say yes. Just, I mean, I guess it wouldn't apply to everything, but I'd say the majority of the time, I would think they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I consider mostly horror movies. I mean, they're a subgenre of horror, but, you know, they're certainly horror movies.
Yeah. Although with, you know, Pacific Rim being the most recent example and the fact that we're getting a new Godzilla film, mm-hmm. I suppose you could call, like, the kaiju film a subset of horror.
Yeah, definitely. It's its own kind of thing.
Yeah. But it falls under, you know, horror is kind of a big tent genre. Certainly. So, yeah, I think it falls under that.
Okay. All right. So that's it for this week's Ask DTP. And if you have questions, send them into the Facebook page or to me at, like I said, sendbydave@gmail.com. And we'll be right back with Alfie Hopkins, Cannibal Hunter.
Do you like movie reviews that are insightful, thought-provoking, and delivered by somebody who's trained to critically dissect every aspect of a motion picture without ever having to use obscenities?
Then you've got the wrong f***ing show. Kruger Nation Horror Podcast is ready to feed your slasher movie and exploitation needs. There'll be more blood, expletives, and titties than you can shake your grandma's beetle flaps at. Visit www.krugernation.com.
Oh, good God, a butthole casserole!
It came from the instant cue.
Always alone and always avoided. Nobody loves a lonely jaguar. I have a strong and beautiful body, but nobody loves.
It seems new residents have arrived in the dead-end town of Fauntree.
Gamlins are having a housewarming party tomorrow night.
Are they our new neighbours?
Parker, it's me. Let's keep our eyes on the Gamlins.
That's what I want to hear.
I'm telling you, Parker, we are onto something this time. You did a bit of work for Charlie, right?
Well, Sharpney's not here, so...
Every village that the Gamlins have moved into, there has been a spike in reported missing people.
What are you after?
Well, you should be careful what you accuse people of.
Help me!
Alfie Hopkins, Cannibal Hunter. This was released in 2012, and synopsis is, an aspiring teen detective stumbles into her first real case when investigating a mysterious new family in her neighborhood. This was directed by Ryan Andrews, written by Riyad Barmania and Ryan Andrews. It stars Jamie Winston as Alfie Hopkins, Anurin Barnard as Dylan Parker, Rupert Evans as Mr. Gammon, Kate McGowan as Miss Gammon, Kimberly Nixon as Pippa, Gwyneth Keyworth as Ruby Gammon, Will Payne as Elliot Gammon, Amanda Drew as Susanna Hopkins, Julian Lewis-Jones as Harry Hopkins, Claire Cage as Lottie Jenkins, Richard Harrington as Timothy Jenkins, Sol Remy as Constable Kelly, Alistair Cumming as Mr. Parker, and Ray Winstone as Butcher Bryan.
who was also the executive producer.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, the whole thing I couldn't help wondering, is that the reason that she's in this movie, or is that the reason this movie was made?
I think that's got to be a big part of it, because she's listed as a producer as well.
A lot of the cast were listed as producers. All right, so...
Okay, well, first when I read the description for this movie, the first thing I thought was that it sounded kind of like a version of The Burbs. And so I was like, okay, you know, I'm down with that. So I'm watching it. It's not exactly. I mean, it kind of is. There are a lot of things about it that ring that way. But it was a little slow going. And I won't even necessarily call it deliberately paced, because I don't think it was. I'll just call it slow. And although I do believe it had its charming moments, there were things that kept running through my mind the entire time. Like, why is she playing this teenager when she's obviously 30?
I didn't know if she was 30 or just British.
Yeah, like either she's older than she's pretending to be, or she's had a really hard life. I don't know. And bless her if she really is young. I actually didn't look it up and check, so I apologize if I just insulted her. But yeah, I wasn't sold completely on some of the relationships here, yet then some of them felt pretty natural. Like so at times during the movie when Elfie was talking with what was the boy's name?
Dylan.
Yeah. When, that's right, Dylan. When she was spending time with him, it almost felt like this was, it was a glimpse from a show that had been running for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I felt that connection with them. So I think that was appropriate for their roles. And then it also makes me wonder if maybe they really do have a relationship, you know, whether some kind, you know, whether it's friends or whatever outside of this, because I just feel like there's a pretty deep connection there. I mean, it came across that way. And then other times, like with the entire Gammon family, I kept waiting for the moment when we found out that they weren't actually related, right. You know, because it just didn't feel that they were to me.
Okay. Really quickly, let me break in. Jamie Winstone was born in 1985.
And that would make her...
28.
Okay, damn, I almost had it. so, yeah. And I don't know that they actually said her age. But
no, it's assumed she's probably a teenager, early 20s, maybe. I don't know. They were doing Whippets, for Christ's sake, which they got a laugh out of me.
The Gammon kid at one point said, you know, he was talking about Dylan, saying he was much older than she. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine that he and Elfie were roughly the same age. Right. So I guess she was supposed to be older. I really don't feel like she was supposed to be as old as she actually is, though. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so there you go. I mean, it dragged a bit. By the time it was over, I was pretty happy that it was done. but it, you know, it did have some cute moments, some funny moments, and I did feel a genuine connection between some of the characters, like I said. So it wasn't horrible for me. It was just, you know, I liked it.
Yeah, Bo.
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty big mess of a movie. I you know, all the stuff that you said, I agree with that. There are some characters that are sketched out enough that they seem to have connections with one another and blah blah blah. But I don't think Elfie Hopkins as a character is very endearing.
Nope.
So I didn't give a shit if somebody ate her. I thought she was a real bitch to her friend.
Yeah.
So that made me like her even less. And like all this stuff with her doing the investigations and so forth, that gets lost at a certain point only to get picked up again later. That like my biggest problem with this movie is that there's so many elements that seem to pop up for the sake of, oh, well, this is important in this scene.
Right.
And then are forgotten about until they're needed again, instead of the characters having very clear through lines. Mm-hmm. And here's how they're growing. And
right.
Yeah, I don't like most of the characters in this movie. I don't think that, I mean, the movie is called Elfie Hopkins Cannibal Hunter, and it takes an hour for her to realize they're cannibals.
Right.
You know, and I was like, okay.
And even then, we don't really get to see them eat anybody.
And when you do, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It looks so crappy. The music, holy crap. Some of the music cues in this seem wildly inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the exact scene where it occurred to me. There, it's a scene where she's kind of escaping from the Gammon house. And the music is this weird kind of piano piece. And I was like, shouldn't the music be making me feel excited or, you know, that there's some sort of threat as opposed to, I feel like shopping. And yeah, I thought cover to cover, like this is After Earth, the British version.
Ooh.
You know, where Ray and Jamie Winstone were like, you know, right, let's do a movie. And that's my British. And so they did. And Ray Winstone is the only thing that's really any good about this movie. And he's in it for 2 minutes. And when he's in it at the end, again, wildly inappropriate. Where did he come from? What the fuck is going on in this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. But... And then at the end of the movie, they're leaving. They're heading out of town. After, like, their families have been massacred and there's no sense of, well, you know, we should probably pack up. And I thought, okay, well, maybe this is happening months later. But then there's makeup on Jamie Winstone to indicate, oh, this is still relatively fresh. And they seem to be taking all of the events of the film surprisingly well.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, and then we get a glimpse of the relationship between her father and her stepmother, but that's never really fleshed out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, what's the point?
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, and then in the end you've got when he's being attacked and his wife is just like standing over watching. It really kind of bothers me that he suffered so greatly while she just got shot in the neck before she even knew what happened. I'm like, damn it, she was such a bitch. I want to, you know, give her some stabberoos. Then I guess, I don't know, maybe that was supposed to be a commentary on how, I don't know, something to do with him. Because at that one point when she's like, you know, what's happened to you? You know, like he's completely emasculated by this new wife. But really, none of that stuff matters because it doesn't come into play. So these are things about these characters that you get just enough to, and you get to know just enough about them that it kind of ticks you off.
Yeah.
Because
there's that dinner party scene where you're introduced to all these characters, but I still never totally understood who they were or what their relationships were.
Right.
And then, like, when the blonde chick shows up to seduce Mr. Gammon, I was like, is she a classmate of Elfie Hopkins? Is she?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Who are you here?
That's what I thought, too. I spent a lot of time being confused, I guess, by ages and roles.
I was just that people bored. Were playing. This
yeah.
fucking it, boring.
Right, and that's the thing we're leaving out. It is unrelentingly dull.
Yeah, I think the only scene that got a real chuckle out of me was when they were doing whippets. I was like, oh, I know what you're doing. That would be more fun than this.
I did like it when Charlie first introduced himself. She's like, I'm sorry, I'm a bit stoned.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's just very straightforward about it. I thought, yeah, that gave me a little chuckle. There were things like that, but that I was like, huh. That's pretty much all I gave it.
Yeah.
I like the reference to camel toe. I always find that a little funny.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole cannibal thing, like, that doesn't really...
It's so mishandled
because it's like they don't ever... You know there's obviously something going on with the family, and because the fucking title is Cannibal Hunter, which is added on because the original title was just Elfie Hopkins. It's like, okay, can we get on with it? Please. Can we get on with it? Can we get some cannibalism going on? Something? Anything?
I think they put it in the title because otherwise you wouldn't know what the hell was going on.
Probably. And I mean, maybe if it had actually been like a mystery, it might have been interesting. But it still sucks.
Yeah, I don't know who this movie is for. By the titles, the font of the titles even, and the fact that there's an investigation going on, it almost seems like it's geared towards teens. But then
like an Nancy Drew kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, something like that. But then it's really vulgar and a little too violent for that set. So it's for adults, but it's too mundane, really, to entertain an adult for long.
Right. I think you nailed it. All those thoughts went through my mind when I was watching it. Because in the beginning, I was like, oh, okay, so this is going to be, and I even said that, this is going to be like a Nancy Drew thing. You know, I get it. That's cool. And then all of a sudden she said something that was completely like, I was like, whoa, okay, not for kids. I don't remember what she said, but it was, I don't know. It just seemed to kind of conflict. So then I wasn't sure exactly what I was supposed to be feeling about this. And that just, and then, like I said before, it just tumbled in confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry. I was a bit stoned.
Bo, rating.
Yes. This is hard. It makes me rethink my rating for My Sucky Teen Romance. Because I think this is still a better put together movie than that. So I want to give Elfie Hopkins 2 stars because I like Ray Winstone.
Right.
I don't know. But then I have to give My Sucky Teen Romance 1.5 stars retroactively because this is slightly better than that. I got 2 stars. It's got to be 2 stars.
Okay.
Well, that's the thing I love about this rating system is that, you know how I feel about number rating systems where you're like, oh, give it an 8 and then a 7.5. You know, that's so arbitrary and it you end up having to run over yourself.
Right.
When since we use the Netflix rating, which is just simply like it, don't like it, hate it, whatever, I feel much more comfortable being able to apply the same number to movies. I may not like one as much as the other, and I may think one is crappier than the other one, but overall, I still like them. So I'm comfortable with that. That was supposed to comfort you.
It was like somebody had draped a warm blanket over me.
That's exactly what I was going for.
So
you nailed it, JJ. Nailed it.
You're rating, Jamie?
I'm going to go a 3 on this. I know that seems high after all the bitching that I did, but, it's
that
a low.
That is key. Crazy so pants. Great.
I know, but there were things about it that I thought were, I don't know.
1 out of 5.
That's high now after all the talking that I've done about it. See what I did? I even comforted you, and it didn't comfort me. I hate ratings.
It's a 1 out of 5. David. It was fucking boring.
I'm going to say 2.5, and then I'll feel happy.
I mean, yes, it was a well-made movie, technically speaking, but that doesn't change that it was boring as shit.
Yeah, yeah. But
12 minutes into the movie, I thought I'd been on for like half an hour already.
Yeah. It's tough. We've really, really gone through quite a gauntlet here with the instant queue recently.
Yes, we have. So hopefully next week's choice
beat up.
Yeah, will be better. So we will be right back with Lord of Illusions.
Hey, kids. Do you like horror movies?
Do you like podcasts?
Do you like people called Gil and Roscoe?
If you do, you're going to love
Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast! Every week, you'll join your hosts, Gil and Roscoe, who'll discuss a range of topics, including juice drinks,
alcoholic drinks,
lollipops,
bobby socks,
Robocop,
uncomfortable chairs,
comfortable chairs.
It sounds absolutely nothing like our podcast.
Well, it should be a representation of our podcast, so we should start off with a pure cheesy intro and then just be like, actually, no. That's only way too upbeat for us.
Yeah. We could have some dead classy music in the background and people would think we're really high class gentlemen.
We are high class gentlemen. That's just not what our podcast sounds like.
Right.
So that's Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. Look for us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter.
Coming soon.
This house is a holy place, and even though you never visited me here, I have left behind a few reminders for you to see that the soul lives on long after death.
When communicating with the dead, it is not necessary to resort to elaborate techniques or obscure occult rituals. It is merely a matter of tuning ourselves to the right frequency. All that is required is a quiet place close to the deceased.
Do you believe in angels, Leah? Your mother believed in them. One more thing. There's an animal that's come out of the woods. You should be careful.
There's something happening.
Hey, calm down. What's the matter?
There's somebody in the house.
I can tell that you're upset, so I want you to trust me, okay? I want you to close your eyes.
What I saw wasn't human.
Oh my God!
He was very tall. And what's more, it saw me, this thing.
Rawhead Rex.
And now our feature presentation.
Warning, the following review contains spoilers. Clive Barker's Lord of Illusions. This was released in 1995, and the synopsis is, during a routine case in LA, New York private investigator Harry Damore stumbles over members of a fanatic cult who are waiting for the resurrection of their leader, Nix. 13 years ago, Nix was calmed down by his best trainee, Swan. In the meantime, Swan is... What?
Calmed down?
That's fucking weird.
Nix, take it easy.
That's what I was thinking. I'm
like, in the meantime, Swan
hit... out of mute for that one.
This is a horrible synopsis. Anyway, so basically, Harry Damore has been called to L.A. to investigate a... He gets drawn to L.A. for a case and gets sucked into a crazy world of magic and illusion. And this movie is awesome, despite the shitty CGI that has not aged well at all.
No, it has not.
Holy shit. Origami Man, yeesh.
Yeah, that's some Lawnmower Man shit. Right,
yeah,
there.
It reminded me of, yeah, that's what I was going to say, that, so, and Superman 2.
I mean, even the CGI in Tron looks better than this movie. Anyway, so this was directed and written by Clive Barker, and it stars Scott Bakula as Harry Damore, Kevin J. O'Connor as Philip Swan, Joseph Lattimore as Casper Quaid, Sheila Taussi as Jennifer Desiderio, Susan Traylor as Maureen Prim.
Vincent Chiavelli.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Wait, is he not on my list? He's not. How the hell did that happen?
Ah, see, I knew it. I'm magic.
Who was he? He was Valentin, wasn't he?
No. It's definitely a B name.
Vinovich. Yes. Daniel Van Bargen is Nix. And Johnny Vincore is Tappert. Jordan Martyr's Ray. Barry DeSherman. Del Sherman, I'm sorry, is Butterfield. So, yeah, I love this movie, despite its flaws. Namely, the shitty, shitty CGI. Holy shit. I actually remember when this came out. I really, really wanted to see it. But my parents were like, hell no, because I was way too young to be seeing this movie. But it has a lot of things that I really love. One of which being magicians. I fucking love movies about magicians, and I blame that completely on my father. But it's got some really cool ideas in it, especially for a Clive Barker movie. I think this is probably one of the most imaginative films he's made. It's got fucking Scott Bakula in it. He's like a childhood hero of mine. Goddamn Quantum Leap. And he's awesome in this.
He really is.
He's fucking great. And Famke Janssen is in this. Yeah, she's a young Famke Janssen in this.
No kidding, man.
And her boobs.
Which you never get, you know, the head-on look at, but that one outfit she's in where it's like, oh, I see the areola, there's the little nipple, hello there.
Red thing, she's standing in front of the casket.
So, yeah.
And you just look dead at him, but, you know, it's not bad, it's not offensive.
Who are your two little friends here?
So, basically, the story is that Harry Damore is a private detective who somehow keeps getting himself drawn into these cases where he's dealing with the supernatural. When we're introduced to him at the beginning of the film, he's a few days out from an exorcism he was involved in, and he's sent to L.A. for an insurance fraud, is what it was. He's following Tappert for insurance fraud, I think it was.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah, to get photographic evidence of him spending insurance money.
Right.
Yeah.
He ends up following him to...
Really nasty whores.
Yeah. That was kind of gross.
Or hot.
No, they were gross.
Heard it both ways.
So Tappert heads off to get his fortune read, where Harry follows and ends up meeting up with Butterfield for the first time. And Quinn is the character.
Quaid.
Hmm?
Quaid.
Quaid. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Quaid. And that's kind of our introduction. That's where Harry's introduced to that, sort of the world of what's going on. And in the beginning of the film, we actually get to meet Nix, and it's like the mid-80s.
It's 1982.
Thank you. It's 1985, because it's 13 years later.
No, it's 82, and then 13 years later, it's 95.
Right. Okay. So Swan and Quaid and these other characters go back to this compound out in the Mojave Desert, and Nix is like this cult leader who has the power of magic. There's real magic, basically. And they decide to stop him because he's kidnapped this little girl who happens to be a young Famke Janssen before she becomes Famke Janssen. And so we jump to the future. And
does that mean one day I'll become Famke Janssen?
No.
Are you a young Famke Janssen?
So,
no.
Just like I will never be known as a Spanish Shirley Temple.
That's a good thing.
So D'Amore gets hired by Valentin for... Why does he get hired? I don't remember.
Well, Dorothea is the one who hires.
That's right. Dorothea hires him.
Because she wants to know what's going on with Swan, who is acting all crazy go nuts.
Right. Because Swan knows and Quaid knows, because Butterfield is back and being creepy, that Nix is on his way back. Because technically they thought they killed him and buried him in the desert. Not so much.
Speaking of Swan, in this movie, Kevin J. O'Connor looks like what would happen if Gonzo from Trapper John and Eddie Quist had a baby and then trained it to do Tom Noonan impressions.
That is perfect.
And I challenge anyone to go back and just watch him for a few minutes and tell me I'm wrong.
He is very Tom Noonan-esque in this film.
Although I think he's great in this. He is.
And the Swan character is kind of interesting because he's this kind of awkward David Copperfield-ish illusionist, and, you know, he's so bored by it because it's, you know, he's basically wowing people with real magic instead of illusions. And then he dies in a horrible, horrible accident. Or does he?
He doesn't.
Of course.
And the accident is awesome.
Yeah, it is. That's a really cool illusion.
That is one bad, followed, I mean, right after we get to, or right before the pipe through the abdomen with the sand pouring out.
That's
which
right
was,
after.
Oh, that is just, I love that scene.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so basically this is kind of a quasi-noir mystery horror fantasy thing with some really awful CGI.
Oh, yeah, and that's a shame.
Yeah.
I feel like if that weren't there, it would have elevated it quite a bit.
Yeah.
At the same time, you need something just because of what the movie is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really sure how I would have been happier with it being pulled off.
Yeah.
I mean, more money is what it would have probably made
probably,
me happy.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. That he's like, that was pretty good stuff back then. I'm like, shut up. We'd already seen Jurassic Park at this point.
Yeah. Even the Origami Man for back then looked like shit. Like, I remember it looking kind of dated even in the trailers. And now it's just worse because the fucking coloring looks bad. And
yeah,
they really need to remaster this movie.
And I thought the fire effects were kind of dopey, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't crazy about those.
Well, the fire effect in the very beginning, when he's just sort of tossing the fireball back and forth, doesn't look awful.
Right.
But the fire snakes are terrible.
Yeah, that's really bad. I really, really like this movie for a number of reasons. I disagree that Scott Bakula is the right guy for this part. I feel like he's a little too pure or something. You know, the whole idea of Harry D'Amore is he's this guy who can't escape the darkness, that it's always going to find him. And I didn't feel like he was quite right for that. And I like Scott Bakula, but I can't watch this movie without thinking like, oh, he just hopes that the next case is the case home.
So you want somebody darker.
Yeah, somebody a little grittier. In fact, when I was watching it, I was thinking like, who would have been good at this time? Like Mickey Rourke, maybe? You know, I mean, somebody kind of like that, because I think the character from Angel Heart and Harry D'Amore aren't totally different.
Yeah.
A little bit, maybe not quite so gritty, but somewhere in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. More Mickey Rourke than Scott Bakula. Even though I love Scott Bakula.
No, I can totally see that. Yeah.
And I also am not crazy about the way things wrap up in this movie. I think that the end is kind of weak. Not story-wise. I think all the beats of the story are okay. But mm-hmm. the actual execution of, like, hey, float me up and I'm just going to kind of fly at this guy. And I was like, okay, that's fine, I guess. What I love most about this movie, though, is that the movie kind of deals with this theme of, yes, the darkness is all around us. And, you know, one of Nix's or the Puritan's abilities is to get inside your head and kind of screw with it. And as a result of that happening years before, Swan is of the impression that, like, hey, everybody at heart is just this big pile of goo and shit that is ultimately going to die. You know, that's his perception of humanity. And the movie never really corrects that view. You know, it's just like, okay, well, these people kind of get away, but that's kind of it. You know?
Well, in reality, though, isn't that just really the way it is?
Yeah, well, yeah. And that, but I also think that's kind of a bold statement to make in a film.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I don't know. I don't completely disagree with the message, though. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I don't think I just want to walk around firebombing people, you know. Okay, sometimes. Sure. And sometimes I actually say that, but I don't always mean it. but at heart, you know, I try to be a nice person. You know, I don't just, you know, as much as I want to hate people sometimes, you know, I really, it's weird. I love them and I hate them all at the same time. In the end, it's like, what does it really matter? Like, no matter what we do, then for the next generations, when we die, we don't even know. So yeah. In the end, why does it matter?
You know? Oh, you're getting into some existential shit here.
I know. I didn't mean to. I stumbled into it. Sorry about that. How about that cult member murder montage?
Yeah, that was pretty great.
That was awesome. The bit with the mirror when he opens up the sliding mirror door and his wife is in the closet, just all dead and shit.
That was.
And he just casually grabs his stuff and closes the door. That's great. yeah, no, I like so many things about this movie. I like the character of Harry D'Amore, even though I wish another actor had been in that role. I still think Scott Bakula's fine. I just think he's not quite right. Mm-hmm. I love a good detective horror story, and it reminded me how much I love Cast a Deadly Spell and how much I wish I could be watching that right now. Not because I wasn't enjoying Lord of Illusions, but I was like, oh yeah, that movie's great too. So I really like this movie. I think it's one of my favorite Clive Barker adaptations, actually. Okay. Despite all my quibbles with the film, I think there's stuff that doesn't quite work, but enough of it does that it was really entertaining. I was really happy to be back, in that world because, unlike you, I don't like magicians. I think magic is pretty stupid. But I like the delineation in this movie of, hey, there are these illusionists who are kind of frauds, you know, like the Benevich character who poses as this European mystic kind of character.
I do love that.
And then you realize, yeah, and you realize he's from Brooklyn.
Right.
What kind of accent is Brooklyn?
Hey, fuck you.
Yeah. I think
then later he's like, I love what you did back there.
Yeah. So I think all that stuff is really cool. When they showed the Magic Castle, I was like, oh, Doogie Howser runs that now.
Yeah, he does. It's crazy.
But so I like all that stuff. I like watching the journey of Harry D'Amore as he gets more deeply entrenched in you know, the dark, seedy side of magic in Los Angeles.
And we get to see him stretched out on the bed, half naked and covered in sweat, even more.
I thought it was funny, though, like, after the sex scene between Dorothea and Harry D'Amore, how meticulously placed everything is so you don't see anybody's junk or nipples.
Yeah.
Her hand is just happens to be laid right there. I noticed that. It's so obvious, though. I mean, it sticks out that it's so planned. But in a way, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a pose scene, and that's fine. And
he's very artistic, you know, in his visuals.
Yes.
And he's very, I don't know, he uses a lot of erotic imagery, a lot of As we're going to see next week, a lot of phallic imagery, a lot of greased up people. These are his favorite things. And maybe that's why I enjoy him so much. I don't know.
All things that you would know from reading his books or listening to the man talk. Okay.
Yeah. Or just watching him.
Yeah,
look
true.
At him. Anything.
And I think Barry Del Sherman does an amazing job as Butterfield, which is
8.
Right.
Every time anyone said the name Butterfield in the movie, I immediately in my head went 8. Butterfield 8.
Yeah, I think he's really, really creepy, and it's not just the different colored eyes or anything. He just has a very creepy aura, and it is very menacing in the film, and I like him as a villain. Nyx, I like mostly as a villain. Just by construction of the story, he's only in it at the very beginning and the very end.
Yeah, he's the big bad.
Right. And I think that the way he is ultimately undone doesn't satisfy me narratively.
Yeah.
But there are still moments with that character that are fantastic. I love the whole idea of, I realized I was born to destroy the world.
Yeah.
And all that stuff is great. Speaking of great moments in the film, when you were talking about Harry D'Amore being a few days away from an exorcism, maybe my favorite exchange in the movie comes in that very early scene where the detective or his buddy shows up and is offering him this case, and he says, "So was that boy really possessed?" And he says, "Yeah, probably." And he says, "Well, by what?" And Harry D'Amore says, "Well, the usual." And that's a great line. But again, I was like, I wish somebody else were delivering this line, because I don't think it lands the way it could. Once again, I don't think Clive Barker is a fantastic director. I think he's a really good writer, and I think he's got a great eye, a great visual style. But I'm not sure that he's terribly good at directing a film. I don't think it's poorly directed or anything, but you almost wonder what somebody like Carpenter could have done with this in his prime.
Yeah.
He makes interesting choices to get across his stories. Sometimes even cutting out portions of his own story, from the story to the movie version. And they're interesting choices. Like, why would you cut that? But, I don't know. And sometimes I think he has... I would love to see the full scope of what goes on in his mind, actually put onto film, because I think that would be something cool. Like that one thing I always enjoy the little things, but like the little clever trap that is in Dumbledore's office, with the with the cut off your hand trap
for the safe.
And I don't know. I just think that's cool because, it's magicians, so
yeah.
And he even spells it out, but it wasn't necessary. But they're magicians, so you cut off your hands, you're out of the game, which means you steal from him, you just fucked yourself. And but I don't know, that was a cool little thing. It was just that does seem like a trap that a magician would have.
Yeah, that's something that I have to say. This movie has there's a lot of things that's like, yeah, you definitely hung out with a lot of magicians to get some of this shit right. Like.
Look for something hokey.
Yeah, just having hung out with magicians for so much of my childhood, it's like, yeah, this movie, a lot of this movie rings true.
Well, and there's that running, there's a running theme of real magic versus illusion. And
yeah.
I really like this movie.
Yeah. So, Bo.
Oh, and I mention really that I'd never seen it before?
Really?
Did I mention that?
No.
No, really?
Yeah, no, I have never seen this before. This this came out during a period when I was...
blacked out.
Poor.
Kidnapped by a cult.
No, I was poor. It was college. And I didn't have cable. And in Athens, you didn't have cable. You didn't have TV, which means I didn't see trailers. And the only way I ever knew about movies was I had a friend who worked at the movie theater. And if it was something that she thought I'd want to see, then she'd tell me about it.
Right.
But this one I never saw. And I don't know. I just never got around to it. And so I'm really excited that we ended up watching this, because it really is right up there with Hellraiser. I'm kind of twisting and turning now with Hellraiser and this and Rawhead Rex.
Sure,
but we'll get more into that. I will I will defend that movie. yeah, I love this. So yay, thank you for
No, of course.
Making me watch it.
All right. So Bo, what's your rating?
I think because of some shoddy effects even for the time, what I would call a little bit of miscasting and some resolution problems with the story. It's still great. B+.
Okay. Jamie?
I can't really argue with that. I enjoyed this immensely, and I can imagine I would have been a little more impressed if I had seen it when it first came out. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have, but it was, I feel like it definitely transcended all the problems that,
yeah.
You know, I really just, in the end, I don't care. So, cause I just really enjoy it. So I'm going to say B+ as well.
Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and get into the B+ as well. Cause like I said, I really like this movie and have liked it for a very long time. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Is that a first? Have we all gave it the exact same grade?
I think we gave last week's movie all the same grade, too.
A B-?
Nightbreed?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nightbreed was all B-, I believe.
Wow, okay.
Huh.
Okay, so we'll be right back to close out the show.
I say every house in America should have an electric chair. And every man just once in his life should sit in it. Just so that he can feel the power of millions of gallons of electricity flow through his veins.
I got an electric chair, that's all I need. You get an electric chair, Sheldon, you don't have to worry about the audience. You get an electric chair, you can tell them anything you want. As long as it's real. You get yourself an electric chair and it'll sit there all night long. Kind of a funny idea, sitting in an electric chair and doing a show. Well, think of the therapeutic value of an electric chair and all the money it is. Yes, an electric chair in every home.
The Electric Chair, a show about horror. ElectricChairShow.com.
Electric chair. Wow.
So thank you so much for sticking with us and hanging out with us for episode 65 of the podcast. It's been a lot of fun. Next week, we'll be doing the Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Leigh for our Instant Cue selection and pulling out a special for Rawhead Rex.
Woo!
So technically next week is not episode 66. Next week is a bonus episode. 66 will be the beginning of our Nightmare on Elm Street retrospective.
Oh, that's going to start off so good and then go so, so wrong.
Yep. And it's going to end in a giant argument.
Yes, it is, and I am ready.
Well, how far are we going?
We're going through all of those movies.
Right, but
including the remake.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I am so ready.
Oh,
it's going to be on like fucking Donkey Kong, and we're going to have some special guests. I believe, I want to say Johnny Kruger is going to be joining us for Freddy's Revenge, and I believe Mo is supposed to join us for Dream Warriors.
Oh, is it? Oh, sweet.
So okay. We're going to have to get some emails shout out to them to make sure that they can come in for those episodes.
And I need to go into the closet and find my docking tape.
You know what? I'll send it to you. I listen to it all the time. It's on. I have it on Spotify.
I can tell you what the B-side of the Dream Warriors docking single was.
Wow.
Look at you.
Do you know what it is?
No, but I'm really wet right now.
Right? It is a song called Paris is Burning.
Oh, do I know that song?
Maybe. I don't know what everything you know.
Oh, but you do, and more. We're not still recording, are we?
Yes, we are. Anyway.
Oh, this is the show?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So I think that's all we have to say for this week. So,
wait, there's a Gary.
We have a voicemail from
Gary. So let's go ahead and play that right now.
This is Gary. Just checking with you guys. Glad to have my Devourer family back on the regular. I was missing you guys. I was foaming at the mouth for a new episode. But anyway, glad to hear from you guys again, and hope to hear more content later. And yeah, more fun happening. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
So thank you, Gary, for the voicemail. We appreciate it greatly. And you too can send in voicemails. Just look at the show notes. It's got the voicemail number there.
Yeah, do it. But, you know, and Bo, like Bo said, only he can't tell you how to run your life. Yeah. But thank you, Gary. I love the doggies, too.
So, like I said, if you guys want to write in for Ask DTP, that will be a segment we will bring up when we have questions. And, yeah.
Contest. Don't forget the contest.
Ask us your burning questions or questions about some burning you may be experiencing.
Yeah, Bo can tell you all about it.
Oh.
I can recommend some of the best salves and creams on the market.
Anyway, so we'll be back next week for Rawhead Rex.
And salves.
For your Rawhead Rex.
And meat sweat.
What you want to do is want to leave that alone for about 48 hours.
Let's get out of here.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave at gmail.com, or Maven1974 at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at D Delamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.
Boogeyman is real, it's real, and you found it,
Tear your soul apart.
Or the excellent day for the exorcism.
Red Rum! Red Rum!
As you check the children,
kill you all! I'll drive you crazy and make you kill you all!
I want to hear you scream.
Don't fall asleep.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I guess everyone's entitled to a good scare.